Welcome back to another episode of the Digital Village Show, where we talk about the relationships between people, business, and technology. In this episode, we're talking about how new climate laws are going to change the way we do business. New legislation requires businesses to report their climate impact in the same way we might report our tax. So, if you are in business and rely on sourcing debt from banks, capital from investors, or grants from government, you will need to know about this. The policy shift aims to enhance the quality of climate-related financial information available to the public and investors. And today, we will be exploring what these policy changes mean for businesses, the phased implementation process, and how companies can prepare to meet these new standards effectively. So, let's get started. Today, I am accompanied by two climate disclosure reporting experts who can provide us with some guidance as to how we as business leaders can better understand these changes and what we need to be aware of and how to prepare. So, welcome, Beth Dow. We have the Executive Director of the Australian Climate Leaders Coalition, Beth Dow. So Beth was previously with McKinsey & Co. for 10 years, where she was a leader in the sustainability consulting practice, as well as leading the merger and acquisition work for the global sustainability practice. She has a legal background, beginning her career as a litigator with Blake Dawson and Ashurst. And she is a mum to two amazing children who keep it real daily. So, hello, Beth. It's really a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, Jason. It's great to be here. I appreciate being part of the conversation.
So, Beth, you've been working with the Australian Climate Leaders Coalition for almost a year now. Can you tell us about that organisation and what you're doing there?
Sure. So the Climate Leaders Coalition has about 50 CEO members from across the landscape of Australian big business. So we have representation in almost every sector in the Australian business landscape. The member CEOs sign up to a set of commitments, including Paris alignment, publicly setting and tracking against targets, things like that. And essentially, the goal is to accelerate Australia's transition to net zero through industry-led, very practical action and collaboration. There's a recognition that obviously there's action required on the legislation side, on the financing side, through the whole not-for-profit sector. It's a whole ecosystem. But our ethos is to see what can be done through industry-led practical action just by getting all of the right organisations in the room around the table, sharing, learning, working together. So the work is led by the CEOs and often driven by their heads of sustainability, and each year they sign up to a series of projects. Those projects are designed to directly accelerate those organisations' transition and really they're setting a new standard for cross-industry collaboration, so what it really takes to move the needle for a transition to net zero.
Very interesting. I'd like to maybe ask a little bit more about that later on, because we're about to talk about the role that government is playing in this journey towards net zero, and you're deeply involved in the industry side of that and how that collaboration is working. So I will make a note of that and bring that up later. Our second guest here is Dan Lirington, founder of Acelli Group, the Acelli Group, which is a company that connects business leaders with ESG suppliers. So Dan has worked in Australia and the US for both publicly traded firms and early stage startups across natural resources, tech, marketing, and advisory services. He sees collaboration as being the key factor in ensuring all companies, industries, and countries seize the opportunities presented as we decarbonize the economy. And Dan is also a founding member. Like Beth, are you also a founding member as well? Yes? Okay. Of Climate Action Week Sydney. Great to have you on the show, Dan. Can you tell us a little bit about Climate Action Week?
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I think the easiest way to describe Climate Action Week Sydney is there's a lot of people in Sydney and Australia more generally that are doing really, really great things when it comes to climate, but there's a lot of silos at the moment. And so what we really wanted to do with this week is bring together all of those different groups of people so that we can all be in the same rooms together, having conversations, really cross-pollinating ideas so that we can move this conversation forward. At the moment, we have over 100 events that are going to be happening throughout the week, and they're across a whole range of segments. So whether that be nature, whether that be finance, systems change, sustainable living, industry, policy, or climate technology. They've even got some family events happening as well. And there's a really strong indication of the level of appetite in the community at an individual and business level for enacting change.
Awesome. And are they being held in different locations all around Sydney, or how do people find out about that and get involved?
They are. So the easiest place to go to is core.sydney, which is CAW.sydney. And then you can click through to the events page. You can break them down by the segments I just mentioned. You can also search by day. And yeah, you're right. I mean, like there's some in the city, there's some in North Sydney, there's some closer to the central, there's some over at Bondi. So yeah, very, very excited for it to all come together.
Cool. And when is that?
That will be from Monday the 13th of May through to the 19th of May.
Okay. Thanks for that. Let's jump into it. So we're talking about how the Australian government is seeking to provide a clearer picture of how businesses are exposed to climate-related financial risks and also opportunities. So to get us started and to set a little bit of context, when we talk about climate-related reporting, what are we actually talking about? Beth, do you want to kick this off?
Yeah, sure. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of the listeners will be across this, but for those who it's new for, essentially when we're talking about income being mandatory reporting, we're talking about the amendments to the Corporations Act that will be included in, it's a long title, but the Treasury Laws Amendment Financial Market Infrastructure and Other Measures Bill 2024, which is currently before Parliament. So assuming that there are no material amendments as it passes through the Houses of Parliament, that's essentially the mandatory reporting scheme that we're talking about. So Schedule 4 of the bill proposes the mandatory climate-related financial disclosure regime, and that will technically come into force from the 1st of January 2025. So the next question you ask then is, well, who does this apply to and from when? And there will essentially, there's a phased rollout of three groups that's planned. So if your entity is currently required to produce financial reports under Chapter 2M of the Corps Act, or you're a registered corporation under the National Greenhouse and Energy Reporting Act, and then you also are captured by the defined three groups in the proposed amendment, you're then required to report and to provide a sustainability report under this legislation. So Group 1, who are the biggest companies, they are required to report from the first financial year commencing on or after the 1st of January 2025. Group 2 is from the 1st of July 2026, and Group 3 is from the 1st of July 2027 if they are materially exposed. So it's phased out essentially over 3 years. And the thresholds for each of those groups, Group 1 is consolidated revenue of $500 million or more, and you have to fulfill 2 out of 3 of these requirements to be captured. Consolidated assets of $1 billion or more and or full-time employees of 500 plus. Group 2, it drops down to $200 million plus revenue and similarly proportions for gross assets and employees. And Group 3 is consolidated revenue of 50 million plus. So there's a whole bunch of other sort of criteria in there, but that's essentially the groupings that phase out year by year. And what are you required to report? So sustainability reporting will include a climate statement and a director's declaration as part of those requirements. The climate statement will be prepared in accordance with the advice from the AASB. Their consultation period for that is currently closed, but essentially it will include any material climate-related financial risks or opportunities, metrics and targets relating to climate, including scope 1, 2, and 3 greenhouse gas emissions, noting that scope 3 only needs to be reported in your second year of reporting, just to provide a little bit of a grace period for scope 3, which is much more difficult, and then any information about the governance strategy or risk management for your entity related to climate risks. The more detail on that, though, will come out with the AASB requirements. So how should you think about this as a business?
Just quickly, Beth, you've mentioned the AASB a couple of times now. Can you just elaborate on what that is?
Sorry, the Australian Accounting Standards Board. So they will provide a little bit more detail about the technicalities. Largely, it's very aligned to the ISSB, which is the international framework. And the idea is that Australia then, the reporting largely aligns with what everybody else is doing around the world. And that helps investors have more of a, you know, easy to compare like for like situation. It enables more capital to flow to Australia and all those sort of things. But the specifics will come out through the Australian Accounting Standards Board guidelines.
Okay. And before you move on, you mentioned in the beginning that, you know, the various phases and sizes of organizations and a bit of a criteria for those organizations of who it applies to. Is there any businesses that this does not apply to?
Great question. So smaller entities and charities that aren't covered by those reporting thresholds, plus small to medium enterprises, largely will be excluded from the regime. But that doesn't mean that you won't be impacted by these changes. So I think, you know, we'll probably talk about that a little bit more later, but it's still really important that you understand what's coming and how this could trickle down to your organization, even if you aren't captured by the mandatory reporting regime and the rollout.
Mm-hmm. And okay. Yeah. And so carry on. What else does this mean for those businesses?
So I think it's helpful for businesses to think about this reporting as really akin to their financial reporting. So for now, you know, it's limited to climate-related disclosures, but we know that this will grow with TNFD. This will expand to nature-based reporting, and there's scope for it, you know, to go further than that also. So over time, the same rigor will apply that you apply to your auditable financial reporting. Which means it's helpful for you to set it up in the right way now, you know, thinking about things like where in your business should this data sit? How do you get your different functions, so sustainability, operations, procurement, finance, how do you get them all working together to produce this data in a way that's usable for your business and will, you know, sort of stack up as you have to report? And then also just understanding the role that your business plays in the full supply chain. So this is not something that you'll do in isolation. This is something that your suppliers and your customers will be asking for information from you. So really understanding that ecosystem and what role you will play in this new world is really important. I think there's also, if I might, Jason, just one other thing that I think would be worth mentioning, which is we talked a little bit about it before, but even if you're not captured, there are a few ways in which this will impact your business. So consumers will start to become accustomed to the transparency that this reporting brings on businesses' footprint. So it will become the norm that this information is publicly available, whether you're required to report or not. And similarly, I think, you know, thinking about your business in the full supply chain or full value chain, upstream and downstream, organizations will start to sort of look at their suppliers, not in terms of just their cost and their performance, but also their ability to partner on this reporting question and then actually the decarbonization that will is, you know, is hope will follow. So that ability to collaboratively work with your supply chain and your partners will become really important as well.
Interesting. So this, my next question was going to be around who's responsible for this in the organization. I know that's going to change depending on, but it's such a collaboration. I mean, imagining, and it's kind of making organizations collaborate in a completely different way. We're not just internally, but like with external parties and this, you know, all up and down the supply chain, which is pretty interesting. Dan, I know this is basically where the space that you're working in. Do you want to just add to that a little bit? I'd like to come back to you, Beth, to continue talking about around the Corporations Act and what is required of businesses and how they can prepare. But I just wanted to touch on the collaboration piece quickly, Dan, and sure. What you're seeing in for that.
I mean, that's 100% correct. Like, even if companies don't qualify in the three groups, as they're set out at this stage, they will absolutely be coming into contact from a commercial perspective, often with their customers who are. And so the questions that we're starting to see on tender processes are questions like, do you currently measure your carbon footprint? If so, can you provide your scope 1, scope 2, scope 3 emissions data? Because one company's scope 1 and scope 2 data can feed into their customer's scope 3 and does feed into that scope 3. So if you don't have this information, it is going to become commercially a risk for you as a business owner or as a business in terms of your future revenue generation. Because if you can't even get your application in for a tender proposal, how are you going to win that tender? And so not only is that question around carbon footprint starting to become far more common, but then you're getting follow-up questions like, what certifications do you as an organization have? Do you have your Global Reporting Initiative certification? Do you have a science-based target which has been approved by the SBTi and validated by them? Have you got your CDP, which used to be called the Carbon Disclosure Project evaluation, so that what these certifications are saying to your customers is, we know where we're at. We're on the journey as well. We're not perfect. And I can promise you right now, there is no company in the world that has got this 100% right. And that's not the expectation. The expectation is that companies are really working towards this as a value chain. And the reason why it is the benefit of company who has larger customers to be doing this is that so that they can remain a part of that value chain. The other piece that probably isn't spoken about as much, but is equally important, is companies that are on government supplier panels. Because at a federal level and at a state level, these questions are now coming up on tender processes, and it will get to the point where you will disqualify yourself out of that tender process if you're not able to answer these questions. And that's very much on the B2B side of things or the public tender side of things. The other thing that Beth spoke to is from a B2C perspective. So there is an increasing percentage of the economy who really care about the environmental and social practices of the companies that they decide to spend their money at. So they're purchasing power. So as that percentage is increasing, companies really need to be taking advantage of that by showing the differences that they may. And I guess, like, just to touch on from a consumer perspective and from a research perspective, there is a greater anxiety, if you like, about what is happening globally from a climate perspective. And so the worst thing someone can feel is helpless. The best thing that they often feel they can do is to vote with their wallet. And so you're going to see that really shifting. And so that's why you have B Corp companies that are certified by B Lab who combine profit with purpose. And that's really starting to grow significantly as a movement, particularly on the retail side. I would say, because consumers want to be supporting companies that they feel are aligned with their values.
Yes.
There's probably a few other areas for that. So if companies are following the market trends and they're making their decisions based on their revenue, which you would expect them to be doing, there's a very high chance that even if they're in group two, group three, or don't qualify at this stage, they will be well ahead of the compliance piece, because they'll have to be in order to be winning work, whether that be tender-based or not. And so I think there's a lot of talk at the moment around the need for compliance, but I actually don't think in the long term that that is going to be the main driver. I mean, like, yes, like there's a reason why companies do accurate financial reports each year, for sure, but that's not the reason why they succeed in their market or in their industry. They do it because they're constantly innovating and looking for growth opportunities. And I think this will absolutely just become the norm in the not too distant future.
Yeah, I'd like to touch on innovation a little bit later, actually, Dan, around the potentialities of this kind of change. But how should, just to kind of go back to pick up where you, where I interrupted you, how should businesses begin to integrate these requirements into their existing systems?
So it's a great question. I think the one theme that everybody keeps coming back to is just get started. Dan, I think you mentioned as well, nobody's doing this perfectly. And the reality is that we just need to give it a crack. You continue to refine. It's a really iterative process. There's a reason why, for example, Scope 3 reporting is deferred until your second year of reporting. And that's because you basically can't do it until you have a whole bunch of information from your supply chain. So that process needs to start now, and you need to start working with your major partners to figure that information out, get it in a way that's usable, set up your right systems, that sort of thing. And the role of, you know, customer relationship managers or procurement managers is suddenly evolving. You know, this is a new skill set that they're now responsible for, which is actually, you know, finding ways to share this information, which otherwise would normally have been kept in, you know, very confined boxes within one organization, and figure out also what you do with that information. So is there opportunities for us to change the way that we work together to start reducing those emissions? And now that we've got the information to track it, you can actually get credit for those sort of initiatives. So it, you know, every role is going to evolve. We're having a lot of conversations about how organizations are transitioning from a sustainability lead holding an Excel spreadsheet with some of this information to actually integrating it into potentially the finance team, who then become the, you know, the core holder of information. Information gets fed in from all parts of the business and, you know, fed out accordingly. But this information will become more and more standardized, more auditable, you know, part of the core function of that team. So whether you choose to put it there or somewhere else, you just have those principles in the back of your mind that that's where it's heading. It's not a sort of sit it alone on an Excel spreadsheet somewhere in the corner.
Yeah. So it's not a new finance department, or it's basically because it's all coming from all different parts of the business that it is requiring this flow of communication and collaboration between different departments of the business and then externally as well.
Exactly.
I'm finding it really difficult to imagine how that is going to work. And so I'm interested to hear from you guys on, is there existing system? I mean, how is actual, you know, so my, I'm part of a supply chain, and my supplier or my customer has done a bunch of reporting around Scope 2, for example, and that relates to me, but how do I know what they have reported on, and how do I report on that same information if I can?
And Dan, you'd probably have a great perspective on this as well, but I think it really depends on the entity or the organization that you're talking about in terms of how they're managing that. So some who are way up at the end of the spectrum, who may have, you know, 15,000 suppliers that they now need to interact with to get information for their Scope 3, some are even developing their own technology systems or their own, you know, accounting systems for sustainability reporting. For others, there's a lot of products on the market, you know, that you can now pick up, plug in, will interact with some of your accounting software, things like that. So there are tools and resources that people can use. I think there's also a little bit of a learning curve in terms of how you report these metrics, and it will go from, you know, using pretty basic emissions factors to actual measured emissions and life cycle emissions. And, you know, it gets more and more sophisticated the more you get into it. But I think you just got to keep coming back to the idea of the most important thing is to get started, prioritize where your biggest impact is. So, you know, if you have 15,000 suppliers, but one of them accounts for 60% of your goods, then start there, you know, develop a relationship with that supplier, work with them collaboratively, figure out how it works, tease out the questions. There's industry groups, not-for-profits, lots of other organizations out there that are there to help. But really just get started, because otherwise you're going to have a really tough job of catching up when things take off.
Well, before I move on, actually, what is the risk? Like, what is the, is there a stick here being waived by the government? Like, what do organizations have to lose by not adhering to this, not disclosing their climate impact?
I think, Dan, you talked about this a little bit as well, but I think there's sort of three, I'm sure there's a lot more, but there's three aspects to that come to mind. The first is it's a mandated regime. So, you know, it will be legislated under the Corps Act if you're captured within those groups. So that's sort of one. The second is this will be extremely important for investors. And so if you're looking to raise capital or whatever it might be, these will be very clear dimensions that they will be looking at and comparing against alternatives with. And the third is just this, the role or the risk that it has with your broader supply chain, customer base, the whole market, because this will become the norm for everybody. Everybody will be dependent on everybody else. You know, one person's scope one, scope two is everybody else's scope three. So it does just become a little bit, if you can't meet those expectations and you can't partner in a collaborative way to get that done, you'll be a more difficult company to work with. And so that, you know, that is naturally going to impact your opportunities with other organizations who just need to be able to report and to act on their emissions.
Makes sense. Okay. So now we've got a good idea of, you know, what the regulations are and what is expected of businesses. Dan, how can, if I'm a company owner and I know I need to adhere to these new regulations, how do I actually go about assessing my own current situation?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think we're very lucky in Australia that we actually have some incredible startups in the climate tech space that are doing really great work within the carbon accounting. So I would recommend having a look at those. I would say this is one of those topics where once you start pulling the thread, it gets very big very quickly. And so I would really have a think about who are my main stakeholders at the moment and who am I getting pressure from? If it is a case that your largest customer or client is requesting this information from you, I would be getting a really clear understanding of what information do they need to see, because that will determine the path that you go. There's no point, for example, becoming GRI certified if your biggest client doesn't actually think that that's very important, whereas maybe they want you more to focus on, maybe they want you to more focus on the CDP. So I would start at the very beginning of why am I having to do this? If it is a government regulation piece, then that will be very clear. And no, but because it's based on the ISSB framework, it is very prescriptive in terms of what is required. So for example, the four main areas of that framework is governance, strategy, risk management, and metrics and targets. And so you can see just by that. So governance is how do you actually operate your business to ensure that you're making the right decisions as a business, then from a strategy perspective, what are the risks and opportunities that are in front of your business for long-term success? And so that can be 3 to 5 years, but from a climate scenario analysis perspective, like that could be 30 and should be 30 to 40 years. Like what are the biggest risks to you as a business? But then where can you open up enormous amounts of opportunity? And then from the metrics and targets perspective, that's when you're really getting down into kind of the brass tacks and the carbon emission scopes to understand what does that actually look like? What's our baseline? And then, as Beth was saying, what can we do in order to improve that along our journey as we head towards net zero?
And so far we've spoken about a couple of different frameworks that have been the TCFD or the TNF Task Force for Nature Related Disclosures, or whatever it stands for.
Yep.
These were developed in Europe, correct? And mm-hmm. then adopted here. So what role do they play in helping organizations assess their situation?
And so I would say now is actually the best time there ever has been to start looking at this, because we've just had an incredible period of consolidation of reporting frameworks. So I think at one point it got over 1,500 possible frameworks that a company could use, which ironically is not sustainable. And I think the benefit now is the TCFD has been rolled up into the ISSB, which was always the plan. The plan was always for that to happen. And that's, you know, specific, and that's what the Australian Sustainability Reporting Standards is based on. And I think that's a really positive thing, because as Beth was mentioning, you know, this is not Australia going it alone. Right? This has already been enacted in the UK. This has already been enacted in the EU. This has already been enacted in Japan. The States is getting quite close to it with the SEC. If anything, we're already starting to play a little bit of catch up. And I think any company that already has trade relations with the EU is going to be well across this. Any company that is a subsidiary of a global company in the States, for example, are probably going to be doing voluntary reporting anyway. So like this is already working its way through the economy. And so, yeah, kind of coming full circle, it's just why? Like, why are you having to do this? What's the push factor? Because like absolutely there are companies out there that have a pull factor of it aligns with their values, that they want their business to be a force for good. And that works for a number of businesses. But there's also a number of businesses that they will move when there's commercial pressure. And that commercial pressure is predominantly from an investor perspective, because it is all coming down from a capital flow. And we're also starting to see that, particularly in the States, in the VC by venture fund with startups, like wanting to know like what risk are they at if they invest in a startup that 5 or 10 years from now, hits unicorn status, if you will. There's going to be ramifications if sustainability reporting isn't inbuilt into that from the beginning.
Yeah. And so you painted a bit of a picture of what that journey looks like for an organization in terms of what do we need to know based on who we're dealing with, what do we actually need to be reporting, and why is that important, why is that necessary. And so what do they do then? So they've recognized the metrics around, you know, it might be governance, or whatever it might be, and they know what they need to report. And how do they actually go about reporting those and actually putting systems in place to capture that information and report on it systematically?
Absolutely. I'll give the high level, and then I know Beth's world has been dealing with this a fair bit. So there is an expectation that these reports will be made public. The expectation is that they will be annual sustainability reports, but it will be up to the organization to determine how they do that, whether that is an integrated reporting framework which again, there's available resources for that, or if it's a standalone annual sustainability report. I know a lot of companies are leaning towards the integrated framework because it means that you have that interaction that we were discussing earlier between finance and operations and sustainability. But it's important for companies who are acting to be talking about their work publicly for a few reasons. Firstly, they're doing a lot of very good work, and so they should be sharing that information. But secondly, there are already tech solutions on the market that allow end clients the ability to receive a score of a company's sustainability progress without that company even being spoken to. So if you aren't talking about what you're doing, if you don't have that report publicly available, you'll still receive a score. It's just not going to be a very high score. So the onus is on you to make sure that you are speaking about that publicly, but also that you have the data to back up your claims.
It's interesting having that kind of socialized aspect of it, isn't it?
Yeah. Because like at the end of the day, it comes down to risk. Hey, if you're an investor and you're looking at company A and company B, and you know that you need to minimize your risk in the short, medium, and long term, you're going to be going with the company who has more readily available data.
Beth, I'm really interested to hear how things are going in industry when, you know, Dan's point around the need for kind of internal collaboration within an organization and how they're working together to report. That's kind of one question. How are organizations reorganizing to do that? And then secondly, how are all of those organizations communicating and collaborating and aligning with each other around sharing information, sharing data, and that kind of thing?
So on the first part of the question around how they're reorganizing internally to get this done. So, I mean, every organization's been on their own journey, but I would imagine a relatively common journey for some has been we start out with a CSR officer or a sustainability officer who is essentially sort of a tack on to the side of the organization and is thinking about things at a less strategic level, but more, you know, small initiatives within the organization to improve, you know, environmental outcomes, social outcomes, that sort of thing. Then over time, it's in like that role, you know, elevated to a chief sustainability officer or, you know, other title in square brackets. And it took on a more of a strategic lens. Recently, it's taken on a large compliance and reporting lens because everybody's preparing for these big changes and there's a lot of work involved in that. It's a real resourcing challenge. But I think where the next step that's heading is actually reintegrating some of those responsibilities or those objectives back throughout the organization to other executive leads. So the sustainability officer becomes almost like the central pin who is really just coordinating the effort between the functional leads. So you have finance who is just as across this as, you know, the sustainability officer. You have the procurement officer who understands what scope 3 is all about and why it matters, which, you know, which suppliers you bring on board. And you have the chief marketing officer who understands how to talk about this journey and where you're up to transparently and honestly with consumers. So everybody has a role to play in this. And I think as we move forward, the chief sustainability officer becomes really the person who's coordinating all of those functions, but not necessarily holding a pen on any one bit in particular. What we're really grappling with at the moment is making sure that reporting doesn't become the end game. So there is a huge amount of work involved in this, and it's extremely useful and an extremely important part of the equation. But the scenario that you don't want to play out is that everybody is so focused on pulling together this data and reporting it that we don't get on with the actual action, which is taking emissions out of our organization and, you know, leaning into a transition to net zero. So figuring out that resourcing challenge and making sure we're doing this in a way that actually generates positive outcomes is an ongoing challenge for everybody at the moment.
Yeah. Two more questions just so I don't forget them myself. How are you seeing that, you know, you talk about that actual change on the ground, because it's like, sure, this is what we need to do, but how do, and we can reorganize and we can capture that information, but that's kind of the easy part. I mean, the change that we're actually needs to happen is, the whole point of this is to change things, right? So first question is, how are you kind of seeing that, especially at an industry level? Like, what kind of conversations are happening between industry and business leaders around how to, because there's going to be implications for such change. It's going to be shifting old business models and profit margins and all these kinds of things that people care about, businesses care about. Second question is, how are these reporting, these reports being assessed?
So first question, that is essentially the reason for the Climate Leaders Coalition existing. So back when it was first started, which was a few years ago, it was a different environment with a different government, different challenges. As it's evolved, you know, there's been increasing recognition that in a lot of these areas, they're system challenges that involve, you know, a whole different set of organizations in order to move something forward. And you can't just do that within your own backyard. So having, you know, 50 CEOs in a room to talk about what they're learning, what challenges they're having, pollinating, cross-pollinating across industries, but also actually just sparking opportunities to collaborate and to, you know, share some of their, push some of their shared challenges forward is really important. And that happens at the CEO level. It also happens at the head of sustainability level, who are often executing a lot of these initiatives. So if you have somebody sitting in the energy sector who's grappling with, you know, to our topic today, for example, some dimension of scope 3 reporting, and they can pick up the phone and call somebody who works for a large food retailer or works for a bank or a mining company or whatever, and ask them about how they're thinking about it, suddenly everybody can move a lot faster and things start to flow. So that's exactly our reason for being, that if you're able to get that cross-sectoral interaction and a new mindset of cooperating, not always competing, because these are shared challenges, and you know, the faster we move together forward, the better. That will really, you know, accelerate change for Australia. So there's lots of other groups doing really amazing stuff in this space, but that is the reason for being for the Climate Leaders Coalition.
Interesting. That's it's a very interesting space of work. Yes. Okay. Thanks for that. And this is an open question to kind of both of you, but I am really interested to understand more about how these reports are being, these claims are being assessed. Who by? Are they? Is it an automated process? Is it a manual process? If you know how that works.
So, I mean, like the initial, like an audit, and considering this is Beth's background, I'll let her speak to this, but the audit process is very similar to your financial auditing process in terms of you do need a third party verification to ensure, yeah, that this is, that what you're saying is legit.
And who does that?
So,
third party verifier, sorry.
It'll be very similar again to the financial auditors. So, you know, the big traditional auditors will rapidly expanding their capabilities and their capacity to deal with this. I think there's a general sense that there is probably an under capacity at the moment in the market to deal with all of this at full scale. So there are a lot of organizations who are running at that problem as well to make sure that, you know, there is the auditing capacity available. But then I think the other aspect to it, which Danny mentioned a little bit earlier, was there will be a lot of sort of consumer platforms available to, at a more automated level, assess a lot of this information. So many of them exist at the moment, but I would imagine they will proliferate as this information is more available. So it will be more accessible to institutions, you know, investors, those sort of things, but also just to general consumers who are interested to see, you know, where an organization is up to. And I think that comes up a lot also when you talk about climate transition action plans and the credibility of those plans, which is a big, that's a very loaded statement there. There's a lot behind the definition of what is credible. But as a start, good data that's transparently reported and both the progress but also the challenges are communicated effectively is a large component of that.
For sure. I guess just the other thing I'd say is, particularly for companies starting their journey, like this is the ultimate example of you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Like there is a lot of organizations that have done this before, consultancies that have done this before, online resources that are available for you. Like even though it is, you know, the thread that turns into the tapestry, there's so much help available, because I think everyone is very conscious that for a company to run this themselves, or firstly from a verification perspective, they can't, like that at least they need it verified, but also just from a resource and capacity perspective, like there's a reason why this is such a busy space at the moment, and it's because so many companies are already on the journey and have realized the level of work that they have ahead of them as well.
Yeah. I have one more question about the reporting, and then I want to move to Dan talking a little bit more about how organizations can kind of, what are their next kind of action steps now? But I do have a kind of an interest, I suppose, in the reporting aspect of things and how these claims are being assessed. And if these claims are being verified by, the Big Four firms or those kinds of consultancies that we depend on for that kind of thing. And looking back last year, I think it was with the whole kind of CBA issue, debacle, what is the risk of greenwashing, and how do we kind of address that, or how do we try and avoid that happening?
For sure. So I guess I'm happy to jump in there. I think because it is under Chapter 2M, like this is no longer the ACCC catching someone else for using a wave image on their product, right? Like this is you are committing to the market that this is accurate. For the vast majority of people, I think that's a pretty strong stick in terms of making sure that you've got your ducks in a row and that you're working with a partner who is reputable, who can verify that your numbers are correct. I mean, like, and you know, the group one is obviously going to be going first, but there's going to be companies in group one that aren't necessarily the largest companies in Australia. And I wouldn't be expecting the government to necessarily be focusing on the biggest companies to start with. I think they'd be having a look who in group one. Their evaluation of it is going to be across the board. And so because that is the case, I think it's really important that organizations are very clear on what they're saying, what they're committing to, and then what are action plans they have in place.
Cool. Beth, do you have anything to add to that?
No, just to say, I think I said it earlier, but it's an evolving process as well. So being extremely clear, you know, when you get started on this, what assumptions you're using, if you're using emissions factors, what, where they're from, how you've made all of your calculations a clear, auditable train of work will be really important. But at the same time, just to recognize that everybody is doing this a lot of companies are doing this for the first time. So it is a learning process. And as your supply chain gets better data, you will have better data and, everybody will move forward together. So don't let it be a barrier to you getting started. Just first step, get going.
Definitely. Awesome. And just speaking to that, so getting started, getting going, there is, it's a need that is coming out later in this year for most businesses who will need to be adopting this. It's going to be new for them to try and navigate and understand and put things together, processes, systems in place to do all of that.
Actually, Dan, because I maybe do you want to just tell everyone a little bit about Acelli and how you guys are helping in that scenario?
Yeah, for sure. So Acelli was born from the realization that there was this enormous gap in the market between the sustainability leaders that have to deliver their roadmaps and the suppliers who can help them do that. And there's a real struggle for each party to find the other. And so the way that we break it down is we have three pillars of suppliers, and they are sustainability or ESG consultancies, their data intelligence platforms, including AI providers, and then their communications agencies. And their communications agencies that specialize in this space, and their communications agencies that won't work on any campaigns unless the hard data is there to show what has been done. And we think that's really important from a roadmap perspective, because it shows the sustainability leaders that we agree with them. You know, we will help them with the hard yards early on, so that they then can reap the benefits from a marketing perspective. So that's at its core what it does and how it operates. And you know, from a first step perspective, which I think was your question, like first and foremost, the need to get an understanding of what where you're at as a business is first and foremost, right? And that is often from an emissions calculation perspective to understand what kind of shape you're in. And then also, as we, you know, we're talking about the frameworks of the governments, governance strategy, risk management, and metrics and targets. That provides a really strong roadmap in terms of how you need to be thinking about this, who needs to be involved in the organization. Is a board member your board sponsor? Because that's a really important aspect of it. Because at the end of the day, the board is in charge of governance, and they need to have visibility over what is happening in the business. Because at the end of the day, one of the directors has to sign off on the annual sustainability report. So that's I would counsel to do a real deep dive into your organization. Because the benefit of doing that is you're going to see you're actually probably further along in some areas than what you realized. Like I think one of the false ideas when companies first start is, oh, we're starting like behind the start line. You know what I mean? Like we've got so much work to do. And that's just not the case. If companies are already using renewable energy for their energy sources, like there's scope one and scope two are going to be very, very good. And then they can say, okay, we've taken care of that. We've got really strong energy efficiency practices in place and technologies. All right, so now we need to focus on scope three. And that conversation, that collaboration that happens up and down your value chain, that's where the really strong relationships start to work. But the importance of understanding where you're at, having the ability to track and measure, and then produce the results, is key.
Okay, cool. So we've established what the regulations are that we need to be aware of. We've understood how we can assess our current situation as a business and how we can go about applying these better, you know, practices to our businesses in order to report. Let's just spend a couple of minutes talking about some of the, because it's a bit of a, you know, it's introducing a bit of a pain in the ass for businesses to actually, you know, it's creating a whole lot of work, all for good cause and everything. But let's talk about some of the opportunities and benefits of this as well. So there's the obvious climate benefit, which is the intention. Basically, you know, we also spoke a little bit more about the capital and opening up investment opportunities and requirements through this as well. And then, Dan, you were talking about competitive advantages in terms of consumer demand and what people are expecting from brands. You guys want to, Beth, do you want to actually start with some of, especially from an industry perspective, I'm interested to understand what kind of conversations are being had between business leaders around how they're seeing this as an innovation opportunity?
Yeah, I think it's a really important part of the conversation, Jason. So reporting essentially is an enabler. It's not the end game. And if we get into a situation where reporting comes the end game, we've totally missed the point. Understanding your emissions properly unlocks a whole lot of potential for your business. So whether it's finding efficiencies, both from an environmental perspective, but also from a financial, you know, cost perspective within your own operations, and also partnering with your suppliers to do that, you know, across your supplier relationship is a huge one. I can think of lots of examples where some of our member organizations have been able to achieve those efficiencies by, you know, understanding the current state and then working with their partners to improve that. You can put yourself in a position where you become a really valued partner for your customers, but also, you know, downstream also. And really importantly, you can figure out how to position yourself for the transition to net zero, which is going to change. It will fundamentally change everything about the way that we do business. So this gives you the opportunity to rethink how your business creates value and make sure that you're positioned well for the future. If you don't understand your own business and your own emissions and what your customers and your partners are dealing with, then you will be definitely behind that eight ball in terms of that transition. So this is a really fantastic tool to improve the strength of your organization. And I think if people can think about it that way, you start to see the benefits as opposed to just looking at it as an onerous, you know, an additional task that you need to complete.
Yeah, awesome. That's really great. Dan?
I was going to say, there's actually some really great examples from the construction industry where innovative approaches have had huge impact. So like concrete, for example. So there's companies now that are sequestering carbon from the atmosphere, putting it into concrete on construction sites, and therefore strengthening the concrete whilst reducing the amount of carbon emissions tied to that project. There's construction equipment that is now fully electric. So that's good for two things, right? From a cost perspective, your fuel costs have gone down. From a community engagement perspective, if you have a construction site out the front of your house, I can promise you, you want them to be using electric machinery and not a diesel or petrol, just because, you know, from a noise perspective, like it's beneficial. Plus you get the carbon emissions reductions as well. And the fumes, correct. And then like you think about green steel, you think about green hydrogen. So splitting water into hydrogen using renewable energy. But there's just enormous advancements that are being made in what would probably be considered high emitting industries. But there's also a lot of government tenders. There's also a lot of large asset owner projects. And so like that's feeding its way down very quickly. And that's why I'm really quite bullish around the idea that the commercial pressures are running way ahead of the regulatory pressures. And so the compliance piece will be there by the time it needs to be there, because the companies, by the nature of what they do, they want to keep winning tenders.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's really interesting. There's, you know, in the way that reporting might not be the point or the end game, obviously, but the behavior, the change that it does kind of force is, I guess it's evident. I mean, it's working, I guess. And it's a really interesting time in that this is really immediate. And, you know, these changes that are coming into place, obviously, you know, climate change is here now, and we need to be addressing this now. But we're at a really interesting point in human history in the way that we're getting things done, and the next wave of, you know, revolution, really, or next age that we go into around new, you know, business structures and business models and the way businesses are going to transform through this kind of opportunity, if you can look at it like that, is, is really exciting. I'm quite impressed by humanity's ability to adapt and evolve when we really need to. We don't seem to do it until that happens. But
a little bit of urgency.
Yeah.
Yeah. And ironically, COVID was a really good case study for what's possible when it's really required. I think we can take a lot of learnings out of business collaboration from the COVID period, actually, into translate them into this challenge.
Sure.
Yeah. I'll ask for, let's just do a quick round of final kind of observations or something you'd like to share, anything at all. One takeaway from me from this conversation, which has been wonderful, thanks for your time, was the absolute essentiality that organizations internally and externally are needing to approach this collaboratively, but basically through conversation. It seems, in the way of how we're addressing problems and how are you guys doing that and how can we apply that same thing, which is often lost. So it's nice to see that human element come back to business.
Yeah, agreed.
Dan or Beth, would you like to share some final words for everybody? Even if it's a plug for Climate Week or whatever you might like.
Yeah, I definitely want to do that. I would just say there's no point being wildly optimistic. There's also no point being wildly pessimistic, right? Like there are very specific actions that we can take as individuals, companies and countries in order for us to get to net zero by 2050. And the science behind the need to do that is it's watertight, right? Like it's so obvious that this is trending in a way that it should not be trending. And I think the role that industry has from an economy perspective to play is huge. Like industry is responsible for 80% of global emissions. So the fact that there are organizations like Beth's, companies like Acelli, we are part of an enormous ecosystem. And that's what gives me optimism, because you've got a lot of people very dedicated to this, because we know that it's possible to achieve. Like it is still absolutely 100% possible to achieve. And we know that exponentially, as more and more companies get on board, then those emissions are really going to start to go down. But we need all those companies to get on board, and that is why this is so important from a implementation perspective.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you, Beth.
And so I guess just a couple of quick things to leave everybody with. One is just get started. The sooner you start, the sooner you can start iterating, learning, et cetera. Everybody's in the same boat. The second is make sure reporting's not the end game. So keep your eyes open for the opportunities that this brings and for how, it can help to position your business. It's a really massive opportunity. So don't let that slip by. The two little plugs. So one, Sydney Climate Action Week is coming. I think, Dan, you mentioned it earlier. The Climate Leaders Coalition is hosting two events, one on Monday afternoon, looking at circularity principles and the role that plays in the transition to net zero. And the second is on nature. So the next step in this process is nature-based reporting, but essentially how do you start thinking about the role that your business plays with nature and nature in your business. That will be on Friday at 11 a.m. Sydney time, and that's a virtual event, so you can join from wherever. And then the other thing just to mention is some of the members of the Climate Leaders Coalition did a lot of work on Scope 3 last year. So on our website, there are two reports that might be helpful for other businesses to have a look at, which just talk through some live examples of how they got together, collaborated on a specific product or service, and, you know, managed through that story of reporting data, et cetera, but also actually just optimizing the emissions, which is what it's all about. So if that's useful for people, just jump on our website and have a look.
Awesome. And then from on next Thursday night, which will be during Climate Action Week, for your tech listeners, there is going to be a documentary and panel called Does Cloud Cost the Earth? Which is a really interesting talk into like where business decisions, technology, and the environment intersect, particularly as AI really takes off. And I think that'll be very insightful. And then before you join Beth's Nature call at 11 a.m., there's also going to be a Bondi Surfer sunrise activation. So anyone in the eastern suburbs, from 6:30 a.m. next Friday, we're going to be drawing a line in the sand for and by everyone who stands for the protection of marine biodiversity. There'll also be some copy down there by Glory Days, and then also a panel afterwards as well. So any of your listeners that want to get along to that. And then there's 96 other events. So if you go to caw.sydney, you can have a look and see what's on.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for that, guys. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you both, and thank you for sharing your time and your knowledge with us. And
thanks.
We look forward to hearing what happens next.
Excellent. Thanks, mate.